YMHMI podcast. And Nate, I just have one question for you. How was your Halloween?
Awesome! I took my daughter trick-or-treating. It was amazing. Oh, nice.
What'd she dress up as?
She was Wolverine.
Nice. Okay.
She picked it, man.
No, that's perfectly. She was not. What's the female Wolverine that they had for a while? It was like a clone or something. X3, I think it was.
Yeah, it was like X something or other. I forget. And she only had like the two claws. But no, Kayla's been watching the old 90s Saturday morning cartoon series.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I bought it on Amazon for her. So. Exactly. Exactly, that one.
See, it would be more impressive if I remembered that from childhood, but I watched an episode of it on YouTube about a week ago. So
there you go.
Because I was like, oh yeah, Days of Future Past. They did that as an episode of that series. I'm gonna go see how they did with that. It wasn't terrible. It wasn't good, but it wasn't terrible.
No, I mean, it wasn't the Days of Future Past that the movie came out, which was
no, and that wasn't even the Days of Future Past that was in the comic books. So.
Yeah, no, that wasn't even.
But it was still a good movie. Did you go and see that finally?
Yeah, I got it on Amazon.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, no, it was really funny because then later on I saw a it was the one of the CinemaSins episodes, and then it was like meet. I forget who the director is. The man who makes Brett Ratner completely irrelevant.
Bryan Singer. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who is awesome.
That was amazing because it literally took all of the X-Men movies that were terrible and said they don't exist anymore.
Pretty much, yeah.
And you're just sitting there going, yes.
No, it was a fun movie. I don't necessarily want to say it was a good movie in the sense that like objectively it was probably actually like from a critical standpoint, there were problems with it, plot holes, that sort of thing.
Right.
But as a fan of, I don't want to say I'm a fan of the X-Men because I don't keep up with them anymore in like their current universe. But as a childhood fan of the X-Men, it was so fun to watch.
Oh man. Just that scene with Quicksilver.
Mm-hmm.
That was amazing.
Yeah. I know the people who didn't enjoy
it. One of the things that was pointed out was like, and Quicksilver, the man who has so much power, he could solve all of the X-Men's problems, which is why they left him at home.
Yeah, yeah. With his little sister, who can bend reality.
I know, right? Who can basically make it so none of it happened anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
But then you bring her around, and she says three words, and then everybody's fucked.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and it's really tough to deal with, like, how do you, I'm kind of curious how they're going to do this in the new Avengers movie, which I saw the trailer for the other day and that.
Right. And they totally have Quicksilver and
the Scarlet Witch, both of them
in there.
And it looks amazing. It looks like a really good movie.
Oh, I'm really
looking forward to it because Joss Whedon is amazing.
Amazing.
Quite frankly.
Done.
Yeah. And the movie looks amazing. It just looks like a lot of fun. But, no, I mean, how do you deal with that kind of, power.
Chris Evans is going to be done pretty soon.
His contract's coming up, yeah.
Yeah, like, well, the Captain America movie, the Civil War.
Yeah, I've heard that's what they're doing.
Contract.
Yeah.
And I mean, in the comics, that the Civil War, Captain America died.
And then came back. But yeah, he died. I mean,
nobody actually stays dead. Wolverine died like a couple months ago, and they've already announced him as being part of Age of Apocalypse coming up here pretty soon.
Wolverine is a notoriously hard character to kill. So.
Yeah, they like literally like froze him in adamantium from head to toe and dropped him in the bottom of a lake or something.
That is what we call merely a setback.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So video games.
I hear we
talk about those on the show.
Occasionally. I mean, it's really turned into more of just a basic stuff kind of show.
No, that's true. That's true. But I think we have to give deference to games.
Well, I mean, out of everything we do, I mean, what takes up most of our time is video games.
It's true.
Well, and there's actually one game that, I mean,
video games and Gregorian chanting.
Sure, we'll go with that.
Yeah, I mean, every week, me and you, chanting like a Gregorian.
Right. I usually just fall back on the Monty Python guys that are like walking through. Remember in.
Yeah. Hit yourself in the head with a book a few times. Which explains so much.
No, but anyway, so new game came out recently, and we both played it.
I don't know which one you're talking about.
You know which one I'm talking about.
I don't, because I definitely have not been losing sleep over it.
Horseshit. I don't even want to know. Like, I've been playing on my PlayStation for a while just so I don't stay up until, like, 1 or 2 in the morning.
1 or 2 in the morning?
Yeah, no. Fuck you, dude.
That's, son, that is weak sauce.
That's the thing. I get up at 7 and stay awake all day and then end up... See, I don't know. I'm getting old, I guess. I don't know.
Hey, I was up at 7 after playing this game as well.
Okay, see, I just actually started falling asleep while playing the game.
See, and I just never went to sleep. So it makes it much easier to be up at 7. The game, of course, that we're talking about is My Little Pony Adventures in Pony Dice.
Which is amazing.
It's incredible.
No idea.
I don't know. I was going to continue making jokes about it, but I think like Twilight Sparkle is the only name that pops into my head for that.
Sorry, you started talking about the My Little Pony game, and the only thing that keeps popping in my head is when I was playing Diablo this morning, and I got the rainbow portal and went to Happy Rainbow Land and was killing ponies and teddy bears and flowers.
Anyway, the actual game we're talking about before Nate gets too deep and do his pony dumb is Sid Meier's Civilization Beyond Earth.
Beyond Earth. Which is a great game.
And I would agree.
I'm going to get pitchfork and torched for this. I know this. But I'm not impressed.
What? Okay. I'm going to be going into glowing review mode. You go ahead and give me the not impressed version.
Okay.
Here.
The one thing that didn't impress me about it, and this is the main thing, that's been bugging me about a lot of games lately, is releasing a game that would have been perfectly fine as an expansion. Freaking Saints Row did it with Saints Row 4. That was actually going to be an expansion, but then I don't know, they decided to make it a whole new game and said fuck everybody, and it was basically the same game. Sid Meier's Civ Beyond Earth, granted, lots of new units, new worlds and stuff like that, the tech tree changes were amazing, but it wasn't any-
keep naming the changes and then we'll continue to talk about this being an expansion.
Okay. And that's the thing, new units, tech tree change, different buildings.
And by the way, when he says new units, it's completely different units. Completely. There are no units that are the same.
No, for the most part. Well, no, I guess the evolution of the units was really cool, but we'll get to that. But, I mean, it just seemed a lot like the same game to me. But, I mean, I will say the tech tree is awesome. It's amazing. You know, thinking about it, actually,
it's not a tech tree. It's literally like
a tech web.
Does describe Civilization Five.
The Civ 5 tree.
Right. This does not. Web. Although they do get their metaphors mixed because it's a tech web, but it has leaves.
Yeah, and they called it
anyway.
Yeah, it's a tech web, but they called them branches with leaves, and hence tree. Well, I'd say it's more like a ratty bush.
More like a spider plant.
There you go.
The tech spider plant.
The tech spider plant.
It just gets everywhere, and you know, you go down little pieces.
And you swear it's like driving you nuts because at one point a branch was on one side of it, and then later on, like 2 days later, that same branch is on the other side because what the fuck? Yeah, no, I actually have a spider plant that does that.
Yeah, no, I know. I've dealt with spider plants many times. Anyway.
I will say it definitely. It has enough to be its own game. It does have enough to be its own game. If I didn't spend if I hadn't spent 250 plus hours playing Civ 5. I think maybe that was my problem, is I just burned myself out on Civ 5 and then started playing Beyond Earth.
Well, somebody who has 417 hours logged into Civ 5, apparently.
Yeah.
I don't mean, this is the actual Steam number, by the way.
Yeah.
So all of you at home can now just collectively shake your heads at me.
And sigh.
I will note that I was asleep for actually much of it. So yeah. It was where I would leave the game on and just like come back to it a day or so later.
And be like, oh shit, I forgot.
But that's still only 24 hours that I could have possibly been away from it out of those 417. So do your own math.
Months? Is that what you're saying? Okay.
I once left it on for 3 months.
No,
that's not true. I mean, I might have been playing for all of those months, but no, I actually I would disagree. I think it is its own game.
You know, that's like 20 days worth of play, right?
That's a lot of play. I will say that I feel better about that than I would doing like a played on my World of Warcraft account, for example.
No,
I like the whole account, not just one character.
I have on that. I'm not even. Yeah, no.
My problem is that if I log into that game, it will show me anyway. Anyway, Civ Beyond Earth. I actually think it does stand alone on its own as a game. And I think one of the biggest reasons why it feels like a expansion to the game as opposed to a direct like sequel or something like that is because you had like Civ 4, and then if you jump over to Civ 5, it's like huge graphic upgrade, huge changes in how like units and cities and systems work.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Beyond Earth looks very similar to Civ 5 because it's running on the same engine and because it hasn't really had as long to evolve graphically. So if they had waited, you know, however long between like Civ 4 and Civ 5 to release Beyond Earth, then maybe, yeah, right, there might be a lot more upgrades on that front.
Well, I mean, one of the main things I was looking for was unit stacking. That would have been nice to come back.
Oh, no. Unit stacking was terrible.
Amazing.
It was terrible. It was a terrible gameplay decision. It was mostly, I think, driven by the idea that like, I don't know, to me it's always like, oh yeah, unit stacking, that sounds like fun, until, you know, you have like a billion units sitting on top of each other.
Well, no, I mean, like, you could have, like, I mean, limited unit stacking. Like, if they allowed for, you know, one melee, one range to stack on top.
Yeah, no, the problem is they also combine melee and ranged within a lot of the units in this game.
A lot of them have kind of a dual purpose kind of thing, yeah.
So I can see, no, I can't see it, to be honest. I can see a world where that could exist and where that could be something that would be interesting to do. But I think it makes it more tactically interesting if you don't have the obvious way to do that.
Right. It definitely helps the tech. Yeah. I'll agree with that.
And one thing I've noticed is because I've is that a lot of the victories are actually, if you had that ability, a lot of the victories would be a lot easier to get. And part of that is that you have to protect some of the victory objectives. So if you have the ability to stack a unit that's, you know, very hard to kill in melee on top of a unit that's very powerful when it's on the offense, then you end up with a problem.
Okay, I see.
And I've lost games because I underestimated how like glass cannony a unit was, which is like a guy just came in, hit like this huge giant like robot walker unit, ripped through it, and then went on and destroyed my objective for me. Yeah, no, and then I was like, wait, what? Oh, that is low defense. But it does so much damage.
I was actually incredibly impressed with that, actually, truthfully. Like, the like in Civ 5, the rocket vehicles, thank you.
Yeah.
The rocket vehicles could take a hit.
Yeah.
And that bugged me.
Because yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Like ultimate, like that is like granted. Okay, you can't take a city with a big deal. You have one of those, wipe out the entire, or you know, bring in like three or four of them, wipe out everything within 50 squares, and then you know bombard a fucking city down to nothingness, and then have one little marine, or you know, at that point you probably have the APV. You know, one little APV, just drive up and take the city. Done. But now, they are just so glass cannon.
Yeah, and it's something they've separated out a lot more, is that you can't, and this is the thing that I noticed the biggest amount, is that you can't just focus on science in this game. They've made the gameplay a lot more complex. Mm. And it's something you don't notice on, like, I played it on an easier level at first, and I basically could just play it like Civ 5, which is focus on science, you know, and then you can focus on military later and pick those up, because by that point you'll be able to outproduce and out smart opponents who might have been focused more on the military side, excuse me.
Right, whereas on the other hand, in Beyond Earth, you definitely have to kind of balance the two, because you do need like a defensive thing going on. You do need that military capability in order to defend what you're doing.
And defend your cities, because cities don't just automatically upgrade as you go through ages or whatever. And that's one thing that kind of screwed me over in my last game, where I was trying to, I'm trying to win the contact victory. That's my current goal, is to get the contact victory. And I've been playing on hard lately, just for the challenge of it. And both times I've lost by two turns.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. Somebody else finishes the Harmony victory before I do. So.
Oh, man.
Oh,
the big flower.
Yeah, the big flower, which I've done once.
I love that.
No, it's a great victory. I've also destroyed Earth once, so I mean, emancipated.
Sending all the military guys.
Yeah, exactly.
Through the portal. That's awesome.
Well, you know, you don't need those human bodies anymore. No. So, so I've been trying to win the contact victory because I'm just super curious what's going to happen at the end, and I realized I could probably just like look this up online or lower the difficulty, and you know,
that's not how,
but part of it is the journey to get there.
Absolutely.
And one of the things that really screwed me over with that game was I hadn't focused at all on defense, and one of my cities literally got rolled over by one of the other countries, and not the country that beat me, by the way. It just literally rolled over my city with its units. And once I started building a military a little bit more, I was able to pretty easily push them back because, you know, my science allowed me to quickly research into what I needed to be in order to prevent that from happening. But because I had focused so much on that science, I had lost, you know, a key point up to then, and I couldn't really go on the offensive. I had enough time to build out a defensive military and keep them at bay, but then I couldn't go after the other country that was actually the threat, which was finishing off its mind flower and had only like X number of turns to go. And I was like, oh, I need to declare war on them. I need to do something about this. And looking at their units and looking at mine and looking at all this stuff, I'm like, I'm not going to be able to break through that. I'm not going to be able to win that race. And it was disappointing, and I continued to try and convince other countries to declare war, but they're like, no, that'd be crazy. Have you
kidding?
Seen their military?
They are fucking crazy.
And even though they were technically a few turns behind me, because I had lost that city and because I had had to spend that extra time mobilizing, I couldn't activate my win condition, you know, the five turns earlier that I thought I would be able to.
Right. Okay. Yeah. No, I do see the city defense. That actually was an incredible difference between Civ and, between Civ 5 and, Beyond Earth, just because in order to upgrade your, in order to have more defense in your city, you actually had to build buildings, build walls, build in order to get just, you know, like past the basic bow and arrow type fucking defending from your city. You had to build a missile silo and whatnot. It was that part was really cool how they, you know, kind of upped that in, you know, it's not just, you know, you advanced in age, now your people, now your cities are much more powerful.
Yeah, no, and actually really quick, I'm going to explain Beyond Earth for people who are like, okay, that's great, but what are you talking about?
Ah.
So Civilization is a kind of a board game simulator, which you raise a civilization from essentially nothing. In the older Civilization games would be from the Stone Age to essentially the future, or modern times, slightly ahead of where we are now. And then Civilization Beyond Earth essentially takes from what would be the end of like a science victory in Civ 5, which is you go to the stars, and it goes beyond that.
Yeah, basically it's the backstory for Beyond Earth is basically Earth is fucked. Earth is barely habitable at this point, and at this point our population has gotten to the point where Earth can no longer sustain it, so it's time to leave. And that's what you're doing, is you're setting up a new colony on a planet that was found that will support human life.
Yep. And you're up against all of these other factions.
Now, you're not the only one who found it, and it's actually private corporations that sponsor each of the groups going up to the planet.
It's not private corporations. It's a combination of country conglomerates and a private corporation, which is the Americans, which is the American Reclamation Corporation. Anyway, you and these other new civilizations have landed on this planet, and now you're going from explorers and refugees, essentially, to the dominating force on the planet. And
or at least trying to be the dominating force.
Exactly. And a couple of the changes, and again, we talked a little bit about the tech web being very different. We also talked a little bit about the unit progression being a little bit different. The other thing that's very different is barbarians, which have been replaced by aliens. And when I say replaced, I don't mean like they've been model swapped. I mean completely replaced.
Like
in the other game, barbarians would slowly generate out from their little outposts. It might be a little bit dangerous here and there. The aliens live on this planet, and by the time you get there, they're just basically swarming it. And the thing about them is that you can either deal with them by killing them, or you can ignore them. And if you ignore them, they will ignore you back. Yeah, and I have to say, ignore them.
It's the best idea.
You will not. I made the mistake in like my first game. I ignored them, did completely fine, won the game. My second game, I'm like, I wonder what happened if I just start killing them early on. And you won't survive it.
Very bad things.
Yeah, very, very, very bad things will happen.
Tunnel worms do nasty things to cities.
They can. I've never had one actually take a city, but that's because the normal aliens were able to kill me.
Oh, jeez.
Within, not like they didn't take a city or anything like that.
Right.
But they managed to take out enough of my units that I would have had no hope to mount a comeback. Essentially.
Yeah.
I was so far behind, in terms of like the soldiers I was able to produce, the technology I had, buildings, they would eat my workers, eat my caravans, eat everything. So,
yeah,
so don't piss them off is essentially the lesson in that.
For the love of God.
But another thing that's really changed is that they've made an interesting thing about like your buildings, which in Civ 5, in Civ 5, there's a pretty linear progression. You know, there was definitely a tree and branching you could do, but there wasn't a lot of decision making beyond that.
Right.
And in Beyond Earth, it's not just the tech web. It's not just choosing where you go on that that's going to define your civilization. It's also the choices you make during little in-game quests. One of the first ones you'll encounter is usually you'll build like a relic. An old Earth relic, which I always assume is a whole bunch of comic books that somebody had in a box. And the prompt it gives you is like, some people want to be able to study these, and other people just want them like left on a pedestal so that they can, you know, look at them in reverence. And the choice it gives you is you either have that old Earth relic will cost you nothing to maintain, which means that basically you get an extra, an extra energy, which is the currency, replaces money mm-hmm. throughout the entire game. And when you're dealing with, you know, 300 plus turns, that's 300 plus energy that you could be saving in every city from that relic costing nothing. Or you can have people study them and it just does what it does better. It doesn't cost any more. It's just a better building. And so you get that choice at the beginning. And neither of them is wrong. Like, there isn't necessarily a wrong answer to that choice. Me, I always choose to use the extra culture, because at that start of that game, that uh-huh. extra culture is really key. But I can also see if you have a much longer plan, or if culture just isn't going to play very heavily into your style that game, then having it cost nothing, that extra money could be really huge as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no.
And, you know, you have choices like that all the way throughout. So at points, it's like, oh, do you want one more production from this? Or do you want extra health, which is happiness? Or do you want extra production towards soldiers or just general production? It's like, ah, actually, that's a good question. You know, am I going to be really heavily militarily based later on, even if I'm not right now?
Yeah.
Or do I just want that extra boost?
See, and that's one of the cool things about those quests that pop up. And it's literally like you build something, you build a building, and then usually about a turn or so later, or two or three, or sometimes a lot later, I've noticed.
Yeah, it's pretty variable.
Yeah. It'll basically ask you, you know, kind of give you a bonus option for each building. And mm-hmm. and it'll literally be a choice between one of two things. And even, I mean, you can even kind of RP that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's what I did in the game I played, because I've only put in 12 hours into it, so I only played one
game. So, like, game. What, one game?
One game. yeah, actually.
Really? Okay.
So, in those 12 hours, I decided I was going to be harmonious, you know? Integrate mm-hmm. with the new planet and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So every choice that I made, I decided I was going to follow that. I wasn't going to, you know, be like, you know, the strategizing gamer that, you know, everybody knows I am, which
you're right.
No, the RP thing was just the easiest thing to do because that's how my brain works. No, it was basically, you know, follow the choices that you would make if this is the way you were running it. Like, if you were doing harmony, like, there was one option. It was, do we want to raise the plants up and make them so it was like a biohouse or something like that? Do we want to make the plants grow faster and everything like that? And in the bonus that you got from that was more food. And God knows the last thing I needed, it was more food. I think that city was up to like 45 or something like that. Meanwhile, the other option was like, or you can get energy or fuel or something like that from the plants, and then it would be like plus one production. And I was like, well, truthfully, I want production. Fuck. Production would be awesome. But the way I'm playing this game, really the way that this would have been run would have been just say, go food in order to basically become more integrated with the biology of the planet. That was just kind of one of the ways that I really thought was interesting. And I mean, there's three affinities that we didn't get to the affinities yet.
We haven't come to the affinities yet. And one thing to say about that is that this game does a really good job, even especially more so, I think, than Civ 5, of making the RP choice and the power gamer choice essentially the same.
Yeah, a large part. Yeah, it was really hard for me to think of an example where it wasn't, you know, where it was RP power gamer, because a lot of them are the same thing.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's not like saying that, like, oh, well, this game is all about min maxing. Then no, it's
no, God no,
it's very much about like putting yourself in a place of this and like, well, what is the best decision for my civilization? And the best decision for your civilization is 90% of the time the best decision in the game in general. And it's just a really good way of tying the theme with the gameplay. Mm-hmm. And they've done a really incredible job of that. And that kind of, I think, brings us into the affinities. And there are three affinities, and they kind of take the place, kind of, I say, of religion, But they also kind of take the place of political order as well. So it's kind of a combination of those two things. And there is harmony, which is, like Nate said, basically bringing yourself into oneness with the planet. And each of these has, by the way, a specific victory condition that you can go to that is unique to them.
Yeah. I will say the oneness with the planet thing sounds really hippie-ish. It really is genetically modifying yourself so you're more like...
Modifying yourself for the planet.
For the planet, as opposed to modifying the planet for you.
Although, to be fair, it is also very hippie-ish in that their victory condition is totally to mind-meld with the planet. With a giant alien flower.
It definitely did end kind of hippie-ish, didn't it?
Then there is supremacy, which is basically you, instead of adapting to the planet, you adapt yourself to just be better. Basically replace yourself more and more with like robot parts and isolate yourself from the planet itself.
It's a lot of implants and exoskeleton type stuff and cybernetics and things like that.
And that's one that I've done a couple times. And your win condition for that one is very Terminator movies, which is you then come back to Earth, not like from the future into the past. So actually it's nothing like the Terminator movies, but you as the machines essentially that you've become are the cyborg people. And I actually like the, when you get to the maximum infinity, you get an achievement, and there's something that comes up with that. And when you get to the max of supremacy, the thing that comes out is that the human race will no longer be supported beyond this update. And it That's is the awesome. Sound of inevitability is the achievement you get from that.
Yeah, that was a cool
Mr. Anderson.
Definitely the supremacy one where basically you're genetically modifying yourself. But and as he was saying, the win condition for that one is literally building a portal, kind of like a Stargate type thing, back to Earth, and sending military units back to Earth to take over.
To liberate Earth from its humanity. And you can take that as you will.
You enslave the population.
You can imagine what they're doing.
Yeah.
My thinking is you're sending over all of the military units because they're most robotic, not because they're war machines, but I send them with pamphlet guns that encourage people to embrace robotness.
You keep telling
yourself. Or you could say they go over and just kill everyone. And you know,
I don't think they kill everyone. I'm totally thinking they're enslaving the human race.
They convert them. They pull a Dr. Robotnik on
everyone.
Yeah,
exactly.
There we go. It's the Dr. Robotnik ending.
It is totally.
They go back. They're converting the forest creatures into animals. There's a blue hedgehog. But you're so advanced, you just take care of him right off the bat.
Oh, yeah.
And the final one is purity, which is embracing your humanness, essentially, and to the exception of anything else, which means, you know, you eschew robotics, you eschew harmony type of thing. You don't eschew technology.
Yeah, but you develop all of your technology and everything to help your humanism and basically even to the point of terraforming and changing the entire planet.
And their win condition is they build, similar to the supremacy one, they build a gate and start bringing humans back from Earth over to this new planet.
Right.
And resettle them.
A lot less domination.
It's a lot less domination, but it's equally as scary.
It is.
Because it's definitely the path that's like, okay, now we're bringing all of this population from Earth to this planet. Wait, what did the population of Earth do to the planet again? Hold on, are we sure this is a good idea?
I know, exactly. That's why I went harmony. It didn't involve, you know, destroying Earth or turning this planet into the next Earth.
Well, I mean, harmony is actually a little scary because suddenly the question is, are you even human anymore?
And the answer is no.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's to me, it's just as scary the supremacy.
All the ways that Civ ends, everything is different. It's a complete and utter, there is the Earth way of life is completely done.
By the way, if you haven't noticed a not so subtle message in this, it's if we're to survive as a race, things got to change, folks.
which both me and Adam agree with.
So. Yes, no, we definitely agree with that. Yeah. We need to be stop being shitbags to things. Exactly. anyway, but no, I mean, my argument going way back here, because we've just described the game, is that this is not something that could have been done as an expansion of Civ 5. Yeah, now that we've gone over
all of this stuff, I'm convinced.
Because it's similar. Like, it's similar enough that you can jump in as a Civ 5 player and feel comfortable with a lot of the systems.
Oh, yeah.
But it's different enough that if you jump in as a Civ 5 player, like we did, and try and play it like Civ 5,
you will die.
You will... Well, depending on your difficulty level.
It's going to be a pain in the ass.
It's going to be a pain, and you're going to get frustrated with it because you're like, this isn't Civ 5. And that was what I felt like my first game. And then my second game, I was like, oh, this isn't Civ 5.
This isn't Civ 5.
Oh, this is good.
Hey, Civ 5 was good.
No, Civ 5 was very good.
Hours again?
Yeah, 417. I don't put that amount of time into a game that is really horrible.
Exactly.
But no, I mean, it's really, you know, it's a really good game, and I've been having a lot of fun with it. I'm going to continue having a lot of fun with it.
Me too. I just had other things come up that this is really cool as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't have 4 hours straight to dedicate to a game.
So I'm going to reveal something to you. There's a save function.
I know there's a save function. But
you can come back to games.
One more turn myself. I almost won one more turn myself late for work one day.
I almost did that one day too.
Everything like that. Brought my daughter to school, came home, sat down. I was like, I'm going to play some Civ. And then I was like, oh, hey, I'm supposed to leave for work right now. Oh, I got one more turn and I can make it.
Yeah.
And then literally like 15 minutes later, fuck, I need to go.
Yeah. No, I've done that. I actually did that with the game. I was not late because of it, but I was very close to it as I came. I started a dual game because I wanted, I really actually just wanted to get the achievement for it was for the domination victory. Because I realized like playing through it, domination in this game is hard.
Is, dude, yes.
Like, that's one of the things that I noticed is, like, taking the domination path is actually really difficult.
Yeah, once cities get to a certain point, they are near impossible to take.
Well, and there's not as much, like, one thing I noticed with some of the other Civ games, Civ 5 especially, and even Civ 4 and Civ 3, I didn't play those nearly as much, so I'm sure other people have different impressions on that, is that there's not as much, at least at the kind of medium levels, medium and hard, is there's a lot of technological disparity between different cities and so on within those games. So you can actually, like, as a guy I watch stream occasionally says, he's like, just stick a screwdriver into dynamite and just, you know, go to sleep for the next X number of turns. And you're going to do fine. Because once you get dynamite and once you can do that, you know, get to cities and destroy them so easily, most of your opponents have probably branched out a little bit more and done more technologies that might be focused towards other victory conditions, which means that you can essentially roll over them very, very quickly in most of these games. Whereas in this game, because your military and science are kind of separate, is if you've been focusing on military more, that means you've been probably focusing not only on getting units, but also on getting points into your faction, into your synergy. And as you get higher in harmony or supremacy or purity, your units upgrade themselves. So instead of like, oh, well, now I've researched from my warrior all the way up to, you know, my musket man now. And now he's a musket man. And no one else has a musket man. Instead, your warrior just goes along a path, depending on how far into your affinity you've gone.
Balances it out a lot better.
Yeah, it does, by a huge amount. The downside of that, though,
is at least from a domination standpoint, a lot better
than- is you can't just roll over people.
Yeah, no.
I mean, not in the same way that you used to be able to. So it's definitely a big change in that. So I did a dual map and was like, all right, I'm going to do domination. And it took me about an hour. And basically what I did was went full purity and got the battle suits.
Oh, yeah.
And just built like five of them as quickly as I could and then marched over and took his only city.
Sounds about right.
Yep. So, yeah, mind you, like, if the game had gone beyond that, like, if that plan had not worked, then I would have been fucked, essentially, for the rest of the game.
Right, because if those five would have died, it would have been like, all right, this game's over.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, basically. So, you know, they were very powerful, but I had to go to them to the expense of everything else. Like, I could not really build anything else except for those. So,
so anyway, that was a lot on Civ.
That was a lot on Civ. I so think it's because it's a game we both enjoy. Really,
yeah. If you're wondering whether or not we recommend this game, well, have you been fucking listening?
Yeah, I have to say, this is not a game for everyone because no, I know people who would play this game and would like stare at us like, are you kidding me?
Now, on the other hand, if you're listening this far into the podcast, you probably already love this game.
Yeah, you probably enjoy this game. Or for some reason, you just really like listening to us talk, which is fine.
Mildly creepy, but sure, go ahead.
Anyway, if you like strategy games, it's a great game to pick up. If you enjoy kind of future, speculative kind of science fiction type stuff, it's a good game to pick up.
If you want something turn-based so that you can be utterly distracted with everything else that's happening in your life, also a great game.
Yeah. And if you want turn-based so you can be utterly focused on micromanaging every piece of it, also a good game. Regardless, it's a strong game. But if you enjoy all of those, then avoid it like the plague because you will never do anything else again.
Yeah, exactly. You will look back and say, 413 hours? Jesus Christ.
Keep in mind, Civ 5 was out for a while.
A long time. It's been out for a long time, actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we've done a few nights where we did like 8-hour matches going well into the night of multiplayer. Those were always fun.
Yeah. 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 I mean, that's 417 hours over about 4 years.
Yeah. Which is still at least 5 days of gameplay per year.
I don't know what you're talking about. 17 days over 4 years of that game is not that weird. 17 complete days.
Yeah, complete 100% days. That's like if you suddenly randomly decided, you know what, I'm going to sit down and play this game for 2.5 weeks straight.
Oh, and on the multiplayer side, because some people, I've talked to some people about it, mm-hmm. because I haven't had a chance to play multiplayer on it yet.
Right.
But I have talked to people who have.
Do I know these people?
You do.
Okay. Then I already know exactly who you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah, you do. Anyway, they have told me that the multiplayer is very similar to Civ 5, which means that it's not as polished as it could be. It's not as polished as the single player game, mm-hmm. but it's still fun.
Oh, I'm sure.
But like, enemy civs won't talk to you.
See, I don't know how they can make a choice in the difference because it's not like they really play. Oh, no, well, I guess he does.
Yeah, yeah, and he's the one I talked to about it.
So. Oh, okay, cool. Okay.
Yeah, to see what his impressions were. At some point, we are going to have to play this game together.
Eventually, yes.
Maybe we can set up a streaming day this coming week.
Of Civ?
Of Civ. Me and you on stream doing some Civ BE.
This is going to be some of the longest fucking Civ. This is going to be our longest stream ever.
We'll play it in a low mode. Maybe we'll play it on a fast pace and see, you know. Because I also haven't, I've only played it on standard speed, so I'm not sure how, like, Civ 5 was a completely different game on fast speed versus standard speed.
Oh, yeah, when shit was built in, like, two turns.
In two turns or three turns, yeah. And, you know. And one of the things people would talk about is, like, by the time you got your army across the continent, it was out of date by, like, three generations. So on fast, thankfully, you were like,
that can't happen in this game.
Yeah, no, no, no. No, that's one of the, that's actually, okay. So I'm going to say one more thing about this game.
That's and really cool.
Close yeah. discussion on it is, one of the really big things I hated about Civ 5 is that your military units had to be in your territory and you had to pay to upgrade them to the next level. And that annoyed the crap out of me because it meant that, like, your military units would go out of date. And sometimes it just wasn't worth paying to upgrade them. So you would set yourself back on either production or gold in order to keep a relatively modern military,
yeah.
which, you know, is kind of correct. You know, you, if you want a modern military, you have to pay to upgrade the soldiers you have. But a lot of times it wasn't necessarily the technology that changed, but like the training or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that always confused me a little bit. Plus, like, how old are these military units? Like, are you bringing in, like, fresh recruits a continent away? Because you've literally been fighting this war for 200 or 300 years.
Yeah. It's like, this is probably on about the fourth generation.
Exactly. Are they just, like, inbreeding within this military unit? Or, because I assume I'm sending in fresh people. Anyway, one of the things that's nice about this is that units will just upgrade. Yeah. As you get further and further along, they don't have to come back to the main base.
And that's further, and they upgrade, which I don't believe we covered. The units upgrade with your affinity.
Yeah, no, we covered that very briefly. But yeah, they upgrade with your affinity. So the further you are along in affinity, the better they get. And you also get choices on the upgrades. So, you know, within the unit's upgrade path, they can evolve in different ways.
Right.
So, well, like, with my... my supremacy ones, your choice ended up being kind of like, and this was the kind of the theme for supremacy, which is, if they're next to another unit, you can give them a flat, like, 20% bonus, mm-hmm. or you can give them an 8% bonus per unit next to them.
Right.
And, you know, that's kind of that weird, like, oh, okay, that's, huh,
how am I gonna be
what do I choose?
These guys around, yeah.
And it also gives you, like, oh, yeah, I guess that's how you use them. Oh, that's how you use them. So, like, my portal, I would surround with units in kind of this lockstep formation.
Oh, okay.
And that's also, you know, when I discovered that glass cannons actually exist in this game. When my big, huge spider walker unit was all of a sudden, like, they just, like, ran a soldier into it and dismantled it. And I'm like... crap. That was big. That was expensive and big, and you just killed it in one move. And that's when I figured out, oh, I just put this smaller unit that's not as expensive, but is infinitely tougher to kill in front of it, and all of a sudden, it tanks it, and my little glass cannon is like, pew, 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 and then they go, ah, I'm dead. And that's how it works.
How do they go?
Oh, I'm dead.
No, the thing before that.
Oh, pew, 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 pew.
There you go.
And that's literally the sound they make.
That is my voice going, be available pew, pew, as pew, a sound bite.
Yeah. that's Nate's new ringtone. Pew, 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 pew. Pew, 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 pew. Pew, 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 pew. Hello?
What's up?
Oh, I got an email.
Sweet.
Anyway.
It's Adam. He wants to do the show. God damn.
Yeah. Pew, 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 pew. This is just to give you plenty of time to sample that sound.
Exactly.
Anyway, you had some other stuff to talk about.
There was a recent update with the PS4, and this is actually what I've been doing. What tore me away from Civ, actually, what tore me away from Civ was more games on the PS4, because I've actually been playing on the console. God help me. I'm sorry.
I've been playing on my phone, so.
Really?
Well, I have a new phone, so. Oh. I got myself a Note 4.
Yeah, I know. I've just got the S5.
We've apparently decided to upgrade our phones.
Yeah, I no longer have a Windows phone.
I know, it's crazy. You have a phone that actually does things now.
I know, right? It's amazing. I forgot what it was like.
No, I'm actually looking forward to this because I've downloaded a couple games on it, and I played one or two, not extensively. But I'm like, oh, I can actually play games on this.
Now, I was wondering something about the Note 4. Do you have to install the tablet versions of the fucking games?
No.
Okay. No. Because I'm sorry, that thing is massive.
It really is not as big as you think.
Dude, my S5 is huge.
Okay. You have very odd, like, ideas about the size of... So I've got my old phone, which is a Droid 3.
Well, my old phone was a Droid Bionic.
How big was that? Was it a big phone or small?
It was like, I think it had a 4-inch screen. It wasn't that big.
So I'm comparing the screen size of my Droid 3, actually the phone size in general, to my Note 4. Mm-hmm. And the size of the screen, it's bigger. Like it's a finger, one of my finger widths bigger on the side. And then maybe like a finger and like a sliver of my finger on the top. So it's a bigger phone for sure, but it's not that much bigger. It's not like this huge transformation of size.
Okay.
But it is yes, a fairly large phone. It's a phablet.
Okay, so the Note 4 screen size is a 5.7-inch LED.
There you go.
And your Droid 3, you said?
Yeah. Tap, tap, tap.
Is a 4.3-inch. So literally that is 1.4 inches larger. Now, on the other hand, Galaxy S5 screen size.
So what you're saying is I'm going to be really spoiled if I ever get rid of this screen size and go to something smaller.
What did I say? Yours was a 5.3?
Yeah.
Okay, see, mine's a 5.1, so...
Yeah, I guess. So there you go. So,
yeah, I'm going to shut up now. And
your phone is so gigantic. It's 0.2 inches bigger than mine.
So is mine, and I've got it in an OtterBox, for fuck's sake. So it's massive. Anyway, so
PlayStation 4
update. It is literally the 2.0 update, so I'm going to say, yay, 2.0! Brought in what's called SharePlay. Now, one thing that you do a lot, I do a lot on...
is turn back time. If you could find a way.
If I could find a way.
It's that... I don't really understand the branding there, but...
Anyway.
SharePlay. Now with Sonny Bono.
Fuck. Wow. Oh, my God.
I like that you just got the joke, but you went with me on that path beforehand.
Well, it's a song. I know a song. Yeah, I know this. But God, really?
Wait, Cher's a singer?
No, she is not. No.
That's being very generous of you, Adam.
Exactly.
Anyway, but, SharePlay.
So, SharePlay. Basically what it is.
You're not going to be able to say that word without hearing that or seeing that spelling, are you? From here on out.
SharePlay. That's going to be the name of this song, of this episode. You really?
That's going to be my note for this anyway. Anyway, go on.
Boarding SharePlay.
SharePlay getting some airplay.
If you can't tell, we always have these kinds of themes. If you haven't been listening for very long,
we don't have these themes. These themes just naturally emerge.
Exactly.
In any case.
Anyway, so SharePlay.
20 minutes of laughing later.
Right. Okay, basically when you play multiplayer, you jump into a party. Now, it doesn't necessarily have to be actually playing a game together. You could just be bullshitting. Anyway, one of the things is they threw in was SharePlay. This allows you to play either back and forth with someone or together if it's a two-player game, like if it's a two-player game that can split screen, or if it's a two-player game that doesn't need to split screen, or you can hand the controller back and forth. Now, I say hand the controller back and forth because you're basically virtually doing it and it literally labeled as hand the controller. And this is regardless of whether the person you're playing with owns the game or not. Like, for example, me and a buddy of mine played Nidhogg. I do not own Nidhogg. But he loaded it up, and it's a two-player game, and basically it's a two-player versus kind of game. It's fun as hell. So, I mean, if you have a PS4, get it. I did. And this is one of the things I think share play is kind of a game changer in the console world, is because it is going to get people to buy more games, just because it's like, I played this with my friend and it was awesome. And like, I mean, we played Lego Marvel Super Heroes. I don't have that game on PlayStation 4.
But will you?
No, I have it on Xbox One.
Oh, okay.
So I don't have it on PS4.
It already worked.
But it was really interesting because he's at his place. I'm here at mine playing this game, and it's split screen. And actually, I will say Lego Marvel Super Heroes did split screen awesomely. But it was funny as hell because me and him were basically playing Lego and just doing a bunch of bullshit. I mean, we did a level, the level that he was on, and then we got into free play and wandering around the city, and it's just fucking crazy. Because apparently we like to break stuff.
Like you do.
A lot of that. Yeah. But Nidhogg was going back and forth. It's two characters. You each have control of one. They have swords, and you can either do a low stab, a middle stab, or a high stab. And the middle stab will also, or you can throw your sword. The middle stab will, holding the sword is where you're going to stab it. So you literally have to push up or down to move where you're going to hold the sword. You can also jump and kick. And if you throw the sword, you have to go get it. Like, you have to go get it, go to it, kneel down, and pick it up.
So it's kind of rock, paper, scissors-ish.
Not really, because it's a very large area.
Okay.
You play it in a very large area. So you go back and forth, and you actually have to go through certain screens. Like, you kill one person kills the other, and then he's able to run away until the person he killed comes back. And you basically, it's like a 3 second or 5 second or something like that respawn time. It happens really fast.
So it's like the most murderous relay race ever.
It was fucking amazing.
You run and run and run until you get to the next person, and then you get to complete the race if you can stab them to death.
Yeah, basically. And like, so say like if you're running, you stab them and you run and you try to get to the next screen so that you can get, it's like usually two screens over is the finish line. So like you stab them, and if the person stabs you, then it's their turn to run, and they can run until they get stabbed, and then you can run, and then they can run, and then you can run. And we literally did one, and at the end it tells you how many times you killed the other person, and it was like 48-43.
So pretty close then.
Yeah, I mean, he made it. It stays pretty close unless it's just an all out, you know, unless you know the other person. It's really hard. It's a very easy game to be balanced because literally you actually have to push up and down to stab high. And if you're both stabbing mid, you basically like kind of ting, ting.
It's very like parry, thrust, parry.
Oh, yeah. No, it's
that's where I got the rock, paper, scissors thing was like stab high, block, stab middle, middle.
No, there is no block.
Oh. So do you just kill each other?
Just kill each other.
Oh, okay.
The only block that you can do is if you both try to poke mid and then you bounce off each other.
Oh, okay.
You both try to poke high and then you bounce off each other, or you both
right low. Right, that's what I mean.
Yeah, no, that's
sorry, it. No, when I say block, I mean counter. You counter each other.
That's really hard to do because you're both literally sitting there trying to not hit the middle. You want
right
to stab the other person.
But at the same time, you're both trying not to throw, like, rock. At the same time. So it's very, like I said, it's very similar to that.
Well, anyway, and,
but different enough.
And, like, I mean, if you're holding it low and you want to go high, you have to push the up arrow twice to go high.
Okay.
And I mean, like I said, there's jump buttons. You can jump over the other person and run.
And you go back and forth, or you decide at the same time, and then the action resolves and then goes to the next one.
Oh,
or is it real time? How does this work?
It's real time. It's like an 8-bit game. It's funny as hell.
Okay.
Like, I'll see if I can find a gameplay on it thing to send you a link so you can see what I'm talking about. But it is an amazing game to play with your friends. Do not play it alone. It's lame as hell.
A bit like Gauntlet.
It's actually a two-player fun game. That's it. Like, yeah. Just you, your buddy, go through, stab the shit out of each other. It's funny as fuck. And you'll be yelling at each other and things like that. I'm glad we weren't in the same room because I'm sure, like, my arm would be sore because we'd be punching each other.
Throw the controller, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Like, drop your fucking controller, motherfucker.
So you know it's a good game.
It's an amazing game.
So you would say SharePlay is a success then?
SharePlay is an amazing success to the point where I will call it a game changer. It is going to.
It's revolutionary. It's
fucking revolutionary.
It's really not.
I actually did even like one of my favorite games on the PS4 is Infamous First Light. I actually like it better than Infamous 2 or Infamous Second Son. Infamous 2 was on the PlayStation 3.
I haven't played any of these. My reaction is, oh yeah.
Infamous First Light is a lot more open world, and it's a lot funner just to run around and do shit. Funner. So I was like, he was like, how is Infamous? Because, you know, he sees me play it every once in a while. I was like, well, hell, we have SharePlay now. Try it out. So I open it up, hand him the controller, and he plays my character for a little while, just jumping around, flying around, and shit like that.
And when you hand that off, do they have to download, or are you streaming the game to them?
No, your PS4 is streaming the game to them.
Okay, nice. Yeah. So that's kind of what I was curious about, because...
Yeah, no, there's,
you know, if
no
they download the game, then what's to, you know. So I can see where they have the copy protection kind of built in there, which has really been, I think, one of the biggest things that has stopped game companies from doing that. And it seems like the PlayStation 4 specifically has been, Sony's been really knocking it out of the park with their console this generation.
Oh, my God.
In the same way that really I think the Wii kind of knocked, you know, the Xbox and the PS3 kind of out of contention for a little while there.
What?
The Wii did really well when it came out.
Yeah, it did pretty well when it came out, yeah.
Yeah. Nintendo, of course, since then, not doing so great.
No.
But there was a time,
there was a long period of time when the Wii was the king of gimmicks.
I would say even more than the king of gimmicks. I think it really did catch a lot of people's attention. And as hardcore gamers, which is, I think, with a kind of where we fall into, you know, where we've got the tattoos, you know, we're the gamers for life, yo. I will never, by the way, do that again.
Sound clip.
We can kind of be like, oh yeah, it's very gimmicky. But for a lot of people, that's what kind of drew them in.
Oh yeah.
To the hobby was something that was very relatable and very fun.
Trying to find this tattoo you're talking about.
It's in that part of your back you can't reach.
Oh, the one I'm also using back scratcher to get to?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ah, okay.
In any case, I don't think it's as gimmicky as people of our ilk would like to believe. I think the Kinect, yes, that was very gimmicky.
That was incredibly gimmicky.
And this is somebody who loved the Kinect.
Truthfully, dude,
I love dance games.
In my house, between me and the other people living in my house, we have 3 Wiis. So,
and it's an old console now. So
yeah, it was cheap as fuck. I mean, I bought one, I won one, and they bought one. So bam,
yeah, 3. There you go. So, yeah. 3 Wiis. I have 3 Wiis.
I have 3 Wiis. I cannot run bases either. just in like the case. Man with 4 balls.
In any case, it was a good system, but I mean, you could argue that the SharePlay thing is just as gimmicky, but I don't think it is. I think it very much is a strong thing because it goes really deep into what kind of made games, I think, fun for us as like when we were younger, which is, I remember, you know, passing the controller back and forth, you know, being like, oh, it's my turn. I'll play this now.
Exactly. And they have that in here where you can, yeah, that's one of the cool parts. That's actually one of in the whole like preview video trailer thing that they put out for it was, you know, it's like when your friend dies, you hand off the controller. And that was still is my greatest memories of video gaming was, you know, all of us going over to Bri's house, whether you
somebody's back. House and
yeah, you know, going over to
sitting down on the couch.
I mean, and just passing the controller, doing the one-on-one Soul Calibur fights. That was amazing.
Yeah, no, it was a lot of fun, and it wasn't something where, like, you know, we all had to own that game. One guy owned that game.
No, one guy owned that game.
I think we all eventually might have owned that game.
But
you know, it started out with one person owning the game, and this is my marketing brain jumping in as well, is like, mm-hmm. holy cow, this is like the best way ever to get people to buy stuff. And I'm sure there's people who, you know, for it's a badge of honor them for like, oh, I don't own this game, I've just been playing it off my friend's console or something like that.
Poor shit.
And it's like, okay, that's fine. Whatever. That's cool for you, dude. But I think it's really a great thing to be able to, you know, like if I owned a PlayStation 4 and this feature, more than I think anything else that I've seen come out for any of the current gen consoles, is kind of what's making me be like, I might need to start saving up for this thing.
Yeah, because I mean, I can almost guarantee you my friend bought First Light that night.
Mm-hmm.
The night I let him play it, because it was just awesome.
Yeah, and it's a way
that he bought it right then.
Well, and more than just like you'd be like, well, wouldn't a demo achieve the same thing? It's like, no, because the thing that you're missing with like a demo or with almost any other way that you can kind of preview a game in this day and age is that you miss the enthusiasm of the person who's recommending it for you.
Yeah,
and I mean, even like Civ Beyond Earth, this whole episode has been us gushing about it, you know, a huge amount. But if you pick the game up and start playing tomorrow, you know, unless you've got that podcast playing in the background, you don't have me and Nate going, yeah, no, this is really awesome.
It's awesome.
Try this, you know.
Yeah. That,
oh, you
got
to try this thing.
That was also incredible. You're right. Because that was actually one thing that I was doing the entire time was, dude, try doing holding this and then push that. How awesome is that?
Yeah. How cool is this thing?
And
I remember, you know, playing Soul Calibur back in those days, because I think that was probably the game we played the most.
That or Dead or Alive, because we played a lot of Dead or Alive.
Yeah, a lot of those.
I
want to
admit that though. Let's cut that out.
A lot of Soul Calibur, because we did play a lot of Dead or Alive.
Yeah,
we were teenagers.
True.
I'll leave it at that. We were male teenagers, so.
Yeah. It was bouncing.
Yeah, things were at maximum bounce.
Yeah.
And at 15...
The physics weren't accurate. as well as physiology.
But we did play a lot more. Admittedly, we did play a lot more Soul Calibur than that
game.
Oh,
God, yes.
But a lot of the fun was like, you know, was one, you know, complaining to each other about ring outs and throwing controllers. And
oh, yeah, the fucking ring outs. That almost turned into a few fights.
Yeah, but the really cool thing was sitting around being like, oh, have you seen this move? Try this.
Yeah.
And then showing that off. And really, you know, it's not just fighting games that we did that with. You know, we did that with Gauntlet Legends. We did that with shooters. We did that with pretty much every game that we could possibly have played on a system.
Oh, yeah.
You know, old wrestling games, you know, which I guess is still a fighting game, but slightly different.
Oh, yeah.
RPGs, even, like watching somebody else play that and then handing the controller off and being like, try this out. So I think it's really cool. And, you know, it's making me consider buying the hardware, and I know for a fact that it would make me consider buying a few games that I otherwise might kind of pass on if I played it on my own.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, is this something I want to devote my time to? Probably not. But, you know, if you're in my ear going like, no, this is so cool, check this out, then that enthusiasm carries over into the purchase and then into me playing it.
Yeah. Meanwhile, this month is going to be amazing for PS4 launches. No,
awesome.
I'm going to be playing a lot of PS4. Like, literally in a couple weeks. I think it's 15 days and change now. Literally, two games coming out that I've been waiting for on the PS4, which one of them I actually already own on the... I pre-ordered on the PC, too. But I'm going to be playing it on the PS4 because, fuck yeah.
Which ones are they?
Dragon Age Inquisition is coming out.
Okay.
And same with GTA 5.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah.
Wait, GTA 5?
Yes.
Isn't that already out?
Yes, it's out on the PS3 and the Xbox 360.
Okay, I was like, no, wait, I played that.
Yeah, those are the only consoles it's out on.
Okay.
And truthfully, like what I was waiting for GTA 5 was the PC release. Been waiting for fucking ever for it. And then they announced it's going to be out on PC and Xbox and PS4 at the same time. And I was like, well, who would I play it with? Thank you. On the PC, and my brain kept processing, and I remembered nobody.
Yeah, no, I've played enough of it that I'm kind of done with it at this point. So.
Yeah, see, and then
I watched my roommate play through the whole game. So. Oh, okay,
see, my processing went to the multiplayer because there's a multiplayer.
And there is. I was not impressed by it.
Now,
at the time that I watched it,
now it'll be 30 people in the multiplayer zones at any time.
Which is fine. That was, the thing about the multiplayer with that game is that there's like the missions and there's stuff like that. And I think it's mostly just fun to drive around.
Yeah.
With other people. That's literally like what I watched people do.
Yep. Which is
what I enjoy.
My buddy Bobby that I'm going to be playing with.
There you go.
On the PS4.
There you go. All right. So you got it.
And multiplayer playing Dragon, because Dragon Age Inquisition has multiplayer too. Believe it or not.
Yay.
I know it's not going to be near as big as, I mean, it's not going to be a huge thing, but I can't wait to try it out.
Like I said, I've never really played the Dragon Age games.
I fucking love Dragon Age.
I know you do. Yes. And I'm kind of indifferent to it. So right, exactly. We'll skip that conversation since we've actually already had it.
a few times.
Yeah. We'll talk about when it comes out. Anyway.
Then there's another game that actually came out on it, which was Pix the Cat, which is literally like a semi Pac-Man type. It's like Pac-Man and Worms got together, fucked, and had the most demented little cat. And it's a really cool game. It's hard as hell. Okay. Try it. Nice. It's amazing.
Well, I'm going to play some mobile games. So
okay.
I'll come back to
you play some mobile games. The game I play on my phone is Solitaire.
I've been playing Flappy Bird all the time.
Oh, God. No.
That seems... As I'm sure there are people listening who very much enjoyed it, but it kind of seems to me a waste of time.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks for listening. You can find us at ymhmi.com. You can find us over on facebook.com/ymhmi. You can find us on Twitter at twitter.com/ymhmi or at ymhmi. You can do the tweets at us over there.
Tweet us.
You can find us on YouTube, which we haven't updated in a while, so I'm going to keep mentioning it just in case you want to go back into the archives, but I'm not sure how.
Oh, that's one of the 2.0 things too. I can actually record video on my PS4 and upload it directly to YouTube. So you might start seeing more stuff on there, by the way.
Well, you should be Twitch streaming from your PS4.
Obviously. Oh no, that's the thing. I can Twitch stream and then upload it straight to YouTube.
There you go. So you can find us on Twitch at twitch.tv/YMHMI. And youtube.com/you might have missed it. So thanks for listening, everyone.
Kabam.
500. There we go.
500 game. 500 games.
500 games.
499 screenshots. 498 other things.
And a really long song we'd be singing till Christmas.
Yeah. That got recorded too, didn't it?
Yes, it did. I'm still just recording us.